Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, July 29th, 2000. In the fireside room this evening, we have Tom Fux. Today's session number is HFT 2005. This evening, Tom is continuing his series, Conflict Resolution, Communication, and Management. Tonight's title is Conflict Management and Communication Skills. Let's listen in.
Heard here at Holden Village. By filling out this form and turning it in, it'll be at the bookstore. For the low price of $5.50 each, they are available. So.
What if you're leaving tomorrow?
That's a darn good question.
I think they do send them.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the only thing they probably ask is for payment in advance. That's taken care of. Thank you.
Yeah, it says, it says right here on it, 8%, 8%. Tax if mailed to a Washington address, postage and handling 70 cents per tape plus 210 minimum. So they will send them out to you if you're interested. I think most folks have pretty much arrived. And you can start the tape. I want to welcome you to this session on communication skills for conflict and for conflict resolution. How many of you folks are new to the village or first time in? Just a couple, three, four, okay. These sessions are gonna be a little bit backwards for you, and in fact on Monday, for the folks who are in the village, most of you are probably gonna leave in the next day or two. We're gonna start some of the series over again. So you may not understand all the concepts we're gonna deal with, but I assume most people who raise their hand are here now through the next week, is that right? And we're gonna start. So we're going to start, you're not here through the next week? Wow. Well, this better be good.
Yeah.
Kind of sets up the conflict already, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah, right. You better be good, Vicki, right?
Yeah.
Vicki, I do want to thank you for that. Great musical melody. Let's give her a big hand. An awesome job. For those folks who don't know it, my name is Tom Fux. I work at the University of North Dakota.
Yay!
North Dakota. In the Conflict Resolution Center. Our center has been in existence for 11 years. We were built on a community mediation model, which means we were intended to be a volunteer organization that trains mediators to handle disputes. Our center handles approximately 200 mediations per year. Mostly through our volunteer network. We have 110 volunteers. I've worked at the center, will be coming up on 2 years. I have a master's degree in adult education from Seattle University and an undergraduate degree from Morehead State. Any Morehead State grads here?
No, but Concordia.
Seattle University.
Seattle University. All right. Any Seattle University fans?
Okay.
You really? Cool.
Yeah, that's but great. You guys got more dates to Concordia.
Well, so our center has 110 volunteers, about 40 of them are active. We really do three main things. We do mediation. That's we have two disputants and we have two mediators. We use a co-mediator model. In other words, it's really one-on-one kind of mediation. We do that. We do divorce, family, child custody, landlord-tenant, all sorts of interesting connections there. A lot of university disputes. The university utilizes us quite extensively. We also do facilitation, where we go into organizations and we do, anytime an organization has a hard time making decisions, we go in and help them make those decisions. Strategic planning, sometimes it's over a conflict issue. Oftentimes it's about vision and mission, and we work towards those issues. The last area we do, and really the main focus of our business, and we act as sort of a mini little nonprofit within the university. We go out to organizations and we work with organizations to help them create a different orientation to conflict. And it's really been a very successful model we've utilized and truly have changed the way organizations think about conflict and the way they handle it. We do develop dispute resolution systems, so we incorporate mediation and arbitration and all those different components into dispute systems. So that's kind of the work we do. Tonight we're going to talk about communication skills and communication tools for mediators, and I'm using mediators in the broadest context. My sense is that anytime you have somebody come to you to talk about an issue, you really, in essence, become a mediator. So, and I think for the vast majority of us, mediation is really part of our basic skills. Some people, and in fact, I was talking to a gentleman today who he's an accountant, and he's an accountant, and he handles approximately, he has 17 employees, and he says he spends probably 30 to 40% of his day doing mediation, settling disputes among the employees, trying to figure out, you know, if there's a problem on a bill, you know, all that stuff comes to him, so he mediates between himself and the organization. And my sense is that most of us spend a lot of our time trying to figure out how to handle conflict. And conflict is one of those things that is a real, as we've done more and more research, approximately 40% of all managers' time, so if you're in any kind of management position, 40% of your time is dealing directly with conflict issues. So conflict is more and more taking up a lot of our time in a lot of organizations where they move towards, mechanization, voice mail or voice programs where you have to just punch the numbers and you get to where you want to go. That's become a little bit diffused. And so what happens in some organizations, we work at the job service, for instance, and most people never ever contact a human being in job service in North Dakota anymore. It's all done through computers and filing and all sorts of electronic information systems. So what happens is that the resultant 10% of the problem issues or conflictual issues come right back to the people in my form. And so these people who are in these jobs who used to get, you know, 9 good conversations and 1 bad conversations now have 9 bad conversations and 1 good conversation. And so we've had to be really active in our field about talking about how do you change the way we look at conflict and how do you talk to people when they're in conflict. I'm going to start you all right away today with one thing. I'm going to have you get into some groups, and I want you, one person in the group to come up with, write the ideas down, but when you are mad about something, when you are angry, what do you want from the person that you go to? Does that make sense? In other words, if you got chewed out by your boss, and then all of a sudden you go to your coworker and you say, you know, I wouldn't believe Joe, that jerk, you know, da 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 da, you wouldn't believe what happened to me today. I want you to think about what do you desire from that conversation? Does that make sense? I also want you to think about it when you're in a conflict with another person. What would you like to say to them? That make that part? That's sort of like, so it's two different ideas. One of them when you're talking to another person about a conflict you were in, and then when you're talking, when what you would like to say to the person you're in the conflict with. You understand that? Okay, I'd like you to just stand up right now and introduce yourself to the people around. Most of you know each other by now, but introduce yourself, find a small group if you don't know the people. Groups of 4 or 5. Going to say to the person you're in a conflict, we're asking you what you would like to say to the other person you're in a conflict with.
And it's a personal professional relationship.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, are we like
making a professional
for
the situation?
Okay, are we talking
about
Jane?
I should have known it by now, Jane. Let's give Jane a big hand.
Yay!
All right, let's start with this. What do we want from the person we talk to about? We talk about conflict.
Sympathy.
Yeah, we want what?
An ally.
We want sympathy and we want somebody to be our ally, don't we?
I want perspective.
Perspective. Mm-hmm. Okay. This group.
Validation.
Validation.
Okay, so we want to be validated for that conflict. Say more about what do you mean by validated?
Acknowledged what we heard,
agreed that you probably had some concerns from what took place.
Okay.
So we understood. We want to be understood.
Okay. This group?
To be heard, to be acknowledged.
Right. We want to be heard. We want to be acknowledged. In this group.
Compassion?
Yeah. We want someone who's compassionate to ours. Do we want them to take the other side of the other person?
No.
Never.
That's what we're talking about.
Never. That's true.
Well, at some point, when you go through that list, which one put off with, maybe a trusted peer might give you some ideas or some feedback about positive things that you could do to resolve it. But that's kind of second tier.
Kind of a second tier, but at some point, we want some ideas or some positive kind of. Yeah. Go ahead. This group.
Sometimes we want a chance to vent in a safe place. Rather than escalate the conflict, we can let out the steam on a person we know will not be offended by it.
Exactly. We want a place to vent it in a safe environment so that we don't escalate the situation. Do you have another one?
Conflict T by proxy.
What's that?
Conflict D or conflictor by proxy. The person you can dump on who won't give you a hard time now.
That's right. And in some ways, there is that sort of peace that is like, it's outside of it, and we probably want to say some of the things that we wouldn't be normally saying because it's safe. Good. You have another one?
Well, I do like the idea of solutions.
Okay.
I'd love it if that person just took the problem and took care of it. Kept me out of the conflict.
Sure. Does it work?
No.
Once in a while.
Once in a while. Not very often. You say no? Absolutely not. You have any other ideas for this category? Anybody have any kind of anything else?
Yeah, someone to help plot revenge.
Yes, there is that kind of component, isn't there? Sometimes we want somebody to help us sort of get back, get revenge.
How does this not just become good gossip? I mean, it seems to me that all these things we're talking about, we're going to someone and we're, you know, giving our perspective to someone. How does this first step, is it just plain gossip?
So I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you asking?
Well, I mean, if we're going to someone that we know is going to listen to us, is going to take our side, and all of that, rather than going to someone who will give us perspective, and someone who will, I mean, rather than saying, look, I'm going to come to you because I trust you, and I know that if I'm off base, you'll nail me right away, and you'll tell me that. We don't do that. The first step is we want sympathy and all that stuff. I'm wondering, does that just become gossip?
So there's kind of issues of confidentiality that are sort of rolled into this. And you don't go to a person who's going to give you the perspective of the other person, do you? If this was a fight with a coworker, you don't go to the coworker's best friend and explain. You're right. There are issues, and I think confidentiality. There are some issues of confidentiality that's around this, and that's a great question. When does it become gossip? When does it? My sense for working in conflict resolution, because we work with a lot of organizations, is that in organizations that are in a lot of trouble and are experiencing a lot of conflict, these things happen every single day and take up an inordinate amount of organizational time. That they get so wrapped up into it. And we go into organizations that are completely sort of festering. And it's like an onion. I used this analogy earlier in the week. An analogy, and we always go in there and say, you know, when we get done with it, you're not ever going to get down to the root of the problem. But so often organizations want to get to the root of the problem. That's so elusive. It's like peeling an onion. And in the end, all we got are a lot of little onion chips all around. And the real issues. I mean, there's sub-issues. There's components. But it never gets to that little ball in the center that you think, yeah, this is it. So, all right. What would we like to say to the other person? This group.
Exactly what we said to the person we dumped on. I mean, if I got dumped on my boss and I went to my coworker and said, "Isn't he a jerk?" That's what I really want to say.
So
talking to.
You're a jerk. You're a jerk.
I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a jerk. You
well,
hurt.
I'd love to be honest.
Okay, so...
Without strategies, but you always seem to need strategies.
Okay.
I'd love to be just straight up.
So we'd love to be honest.
And straight with
and straightforward.
That's what I wish.
Right. But what would you like to say?
Oh, well, you end up needing strategies. Yeah.
Just write strategies. This group. What would you like to say to that person in the conflict that you're in the conflict with?
I think you're terribly wrong,
I think you're terribly wrong.
And on and on. And I think you're not listening to me.
Okay.
The F word.
You're not listening. I can put it down. The F word works.
I was avoiding that.
But I think you're not listening to me. You're not listening to me is one of the things that is very important. Good component of it. But you are a jerk and da 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 da.
Personal attacks.
Yeah, and you're not being fair. Is there kind of that issue of fair? Good. Do you have another one over here in this group?
Tell them how you're feeling.
Yeah.
About what they said or did.
Yeah.
You how it affects you.
Give it to them straight. Yeah.
This group. What can we do to solve this problem?
Okay. So sometimes you want to go in there and solve it, whatever the issue is. I mean, I think that there's always a component of wanting to solve the whatever caused this conflict. This group. Any other ones?
Well, we all agree that we're incredibly eloquent 24 hours later. the kind of things that we were looking for were statements that would elicit an apology or feedback, next steps, closure, some kind of guarantees or bringing out of an understanding. So progressive.
We'd like to do something that would elicit an apology because we're hurt, right? Right? And then also move you towards, what did you say, solutions?
Or solution or closure in some ways. Make sure that cooperatively you bring out an understanding of the problem.
Okay, so deeper understanding of the problem, move towards closure. We missed the swearing part, so maybe just put in swearing somewhere. Because that's a component that we'd like to... Uh-huh. Do we ever want to hurt them?
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes we feel like it.
Yeah, I think so.
Everything comes round. You just say that.
I'm not that patient.
He'll get his.
She'll get hers. He'll get his. Okay.
Don't wait for divine retribution.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes God's timing is just not as
easy. Instant karma.
Instant karma, that's right. All right, thank you, Jane. You can all come back sort of into the group now. We're going to talk about...
Good job.
All of us serve this role. We all serve this role. I don't believe that there's a person out in the world that doesn't serve the role at some point or another, and probably once a day, of sort of helping a person understand their conflict. And I work in conflict resolution, and our organization moves very far away from helping them solve the problems. And I believe that sometimes the role of you as a mediator, friend, ally, whatever it is, as someone put it last week, do you want me to fix it or do you want me to hear about it? And I'm encouraging you as people who are thinking clearly about conflict resolution, not to think about ever fixing it for the people. Because whenever you, as an individual, listen to a story of somebody's woes, it is all heard through you, or through them, their perspective of the conflict, fed on one component, fed into you, and then you have to filter it through your existence. So it's already three generations away from the true experience. We at the Mediation Center, we do intakes where we try to kind of help people at least have a straight story when they come in. The mediators never do the intakes. In fact, I want to know one sentence. What's up with this situation? What's it about? Is it about they're getting divorced? Is it about they can't get along at work? That's all I want to know. Because the moment I know as a mediator, I begin to steer people because I think I know the answer. And that's the hardest thing to move away from when you're in this role, is to move away from, I got the answer. You know how clear it always seems to you when you're listening to somebody? You know that kind of that feeling that's like, yeah, well, I mean, you just do this and this and this and this and, you know, go do it. It never works, you know? Because we recognize that people in conflict aren't very clear about what they need to do. Conflict makes us feel really stupid. What I'm handing out is, it's called Communication Tools for Mediators. It also is communication tools for just about anybody that's in the role. And so the mediator is not, I don't want anybody to be confused by that role of mediators. For the people who were in the class yesterday, we talked about John Gottman and the seven principles of making marriage work, and he says that active listening is not something that you can use very well when you're in the conflict. In fact, he says that active listening skills are absolutely worthless for helping marriages come back together. And that's because you are right in the moment. You are in it. And when you're in it, you don't feel like you can, I mean, it would take a Gandhi-like perspective to be able to actively listen to somebody who's ripping you. Ripping you up. Okay? So I'm talking about these skills as from this perspective. And that's why I had you separate these ideas. Because I think this role is completely different than this role. We might get to that role, but I want to talk about you in this role right now. So I'm thinking about you as a mediator. The first one is active listening. I mean, something that doesn't work when you're in the middle, but does work when you're a mediator. And that's that idea of really listening very close to what's going on. What's going on to them, and not developing the solution, listening to them. Everything has relevance when that person is talking to you. I was working with the job service, and this lady was working with this woman who, she was a native person, and she was working with another native person on a welfare to work program. And the minute the lady started explaining welfare to work program, the lady who was in there getting the services started talking about her trip to Florida. And, you know, the lady would stop her and say, well, you know, I'm talking about this program, welfare to work, and, you know, we need to get you started, and blah, 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 blah. Boom, it would pop up again. You know, well, my trip to Florida, you know, it was just a great time. And this happened like two or three times, and finally the lady said, tell me more about this trip to Florida. The lady went on to say that this trip to Florida had been her first trip outside of Walhalla County, North Dakota, which is probably the most up there, out there. I mean, it's not the end of the earth, but you can see it from there. It's, you know, it was her first journey away from it. It was a whole new experience for her, and she was relating this experience to this new experience of welfare to work. And so if we don't listen to what's going on and understand that people don't just say random things. I mean, if someone's talking to you about a conflict and all of a sudden starts to talk to you about your mom or his mom or his dad or her mom or her dad, you better connect it. You better say, well, what's that about? So I'm talking about actively listening and also recognizing that all of us have filters. We have words that mean things that mean nothing else. And one of my best examples is family dinners. You know, the minute you think about, sir, what do you think about family? What's a family dinner to you when I say that word? What comes to mind?
All getting around the city.
What's that?
Talking.
How many people are there?
Pardon?
How many people are at your family dinners?
4 to 6.
4 to 6. Is it loud or is it quiet?
Everything.
Everything. How long?
It goes loud for a while. I mean, somebody might be saying something to somebody who wants to interrupt.
Yeah.
And add their 2 cents worth.
That's right.
Then we get back to home base. We start eating a little bit more. And
yeah.
Matter may not be particularly trying on anybody, but then the minute somebody hits the button, and off we go again.
Off you go again, that's right. How long do family dinners take?
Two, really.
How many hours does it take? Does it take how many minutes?
Unfortunately, not long enough.
20 minutes? Half an hour?
In today's atmosphere, we don't seem to take the time to sit down and talk.
But your ideal type, when you think about it, how long does it take?
A dinner should take at least an hour to an hour and a half.
Okay. How about you? What is a family dinner like?
That's when you all sit together and you plan the meal and you're eating real food and you're really talking.
How long does it last?
Yeah. Half hour.
Half hour. Okay.
Ours, it's like 30 people left all day long. I mean, if you talk about when I think of family, I think of my family.
Family.
And it's very loud.
Right. See, that's just a little emotional filter that we have on the word family dinners. It could be the boss had a project, and your idea of project is completely different than their idea of project, and you know. So we want you to recognize where it says at the top that listen for the ideas and the viewpoints and try to remain outside of it rather than stepping into it. Always recognizing that you have those filters. I'm from a family of 7 kids. There were stabbings at my family dinners. I'm serious. My sister threw a fork across the table one time, a fork, and it stuck right in my belly when clean. And I pulled it out and I started throwing it back. My mom said, "No fighting at the table." I have 17 stitches on my finger where we were fighting over with a hunting knife underneath the table while we were praying the Lord's Prayer. You say family dinners to me, and that's where I am. They last 5 minutes. And if you don't get the food the first time, it's not coming around again, you know? So we all have these little kind of things that are working us. So when someone's talking about, you know, sympathy or being heard and acknowledged, are you hearing them and are you acknowledging them from your perspective and what you feel is important to you, or are you really listening to what's important to them? So key when you think about it. The second one is paraphrasing. Paraphrasing is it's a weird thing, because if you do it wrong, people just, they slap them. Yeah. What's that?
They look at you weird.
Yeah. It's like, but if you do it good, they never know what happened. Okay? I work in a conflict resolution center where we practice what we preach. And sometimes we do it so well that we don't notice it with each other. And sometimes we do it poorly and then we catch each other doing it. And so that paraphrasing is not always the idea of catching what is the words, but what is the tone of the words? So if someone said to me, I can't believe my boss, Christy, I mean, she has just been really kind of, she's been a bitch lately. I mean, she's had like 7 or 8 projects on me, and it's been like, I can't seem to get out from underneath this, and she just keeps piling it on. Now, if I was to paraphrase that, I wouldn't say something like, "So you think Christy's a bitch?" Because that's
what you say.
What's that?
I think I hear you say. I detest.
Tell me how you feel is another one. I'll tell you how I feel. But you understand that the context of that message was that all of this work was getting piled on me and that I was frustrated. So it's about hearing the whole message. One of the ways that I do it when I listen, and I listen, I have to listen very carefully, is that generally it comes out with an idea in the beginning. And this is the way I follow conversations. Conversations go this way. Here comes the idea. They say something, the initial thought they've had. And then they do this little meandering thing. You know, it's kind of like you kind of go, and you're always trying to keep it like, how is this connected to this idea? And usually there's a conclusion, you know, somewhere. Or you stop them and say, wait a minute, let's see if I can figure it out. And I always try to listen to what is the first idea and what is the conclusion. And I try to pull those pieces together because there's a connection. There's a connection. And all of these are about the trip to Florida and about my dad and about all of the other kind of components, how I fight and how I want to get along with people. And they all make sense. But if you don't paraphrase that correctly, what happens is you get kind of sucked in. Because we all know, well, at least I do this, sometimes when I present the idea, by the time I get to the conclusion, it's a completely different idea. You know, as I kind of verbally process that. So if you can help a person paraphrase it, you've done a much better job. The next one is the check-ins, which what Carol just mentioned, if you use any one too often, you're going to get caught. What is the one you hate?
I think I hear you saying,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously someone overused it on Carol and now she just starts to twitch whenever anybody says that. So how does that make you feel is one of those ones that really sort of kind of jerk my chain. We all have those things, and so, you know, pay attention to how you answer it. The mediation seminars we teach mediation seminars, we don't ever give anybody a technique or a tagline. You know, and the group always wants us to develop this long list, and we're saying, no. Because it's gonna, you know, have you ever felt handled when you call into the customer service, and you're like, and it's like, I know how you feel, Mr. Fuchs. It's like, what the hell you do? You just read that off of a little tag board you have up above you. You know, we don't want to be handled. Our very nature, we don't want to be handled. So be careful of that, but do those check-ins. If you paraphrase something, it's very good at the end to say, did I get that right? People are more than willing to say yes or no, and then listen again. Paraphrasing is such an important thing if you're acting as a mediator. And that's what you're doing. Whenever you're listening to another person, you're acting as a mediator. Encouragers, you know, it's that old nodding thing. You know, tell me more, You know, pretty straightforward. Asking questions is a good thing. One of the ways that we've become mediators in our mediation practice is that a lot of people think that we become a potted plant. You know, we just let people talk and talk and talk. No, we ask really good questions. And if we can't think of a question, start with what? It'll be an open-ended question. What is it about? What about? So if you have a tough time thinking up something, start with what? And that'll help get more information. But once again, that information isn't any good if you don't help people make sense of the conflict. Right. Observational comments. We do that oftentimes, and you can do that. You know, you get somebody in who comes into your office and sits like this, and you know, and it's just like, you know, you wouldn't believe what John just did to me. The first thing I say is, are you trying to strangle the chair? You know, I really pay attention to that body language. I had a guy walk into a mediation. Probably 30 years old, just like this. His wife had gone to a safe house as a wake-up call to their marriage. Really a pretty poor use for a wake-up call. And then we were trying to reconcile this lady back into her house because she was going home no matter what. So he comes in like this. I said, you know, would you like some coffee or some whiskey or something? No. And he sits down and he's just like, I just looked at him and I said, you look really pissed off. And he said, damn right I'm pissed off. I said, tell me more. And he just like, you know, those safe houses, they're like cults. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying. What do you mean? He said, I've been so worried about my wife for 3 days. I don't know where she is. All of a sudden I found out she's in the safe house and I can't get a hold of her and I'm just mad. It's like, and I said, I understand. You're really mad because you were concerned about her. He goes, yes. And he just relaxed. And you could actually see like the stress leaving him. I mean, he sat back. He was a little more open. And the people that come into you do the same things. And you can tell that. And if you don't pay any attention to what's going on with their bodies, then you're missing a lot of the message. So pay attention to the message. You know, that there's a message in their bodies. And if it doesn't even, you know, sometimes we find people bolt. They run out of mediations. And oftentimes we see it because they're like this. You know, they start to bob. And we're like, and we say things like, you'd really like to run right now, wouldn't you? And they're like, yes, that's it. You know, if you pay attention to it, it gives them permission and they can let that stuff go. They're being heard. It's all about this. Sympathy, perspective, validation, heard and acknowledged, compassion to take our side. The take our side piece is a little bit hard because we always do it with a little bit of trepidation, don't we? Because we don't know the whole story. But we try to take their perspective as much as possible. So, observational comments. Probably the most important thing if you want to shut down the conversation is to summarize it. We do mediation and we teach this perspective of listening to the parties. And so often, like even in job service and we worked for the Workers' Compensation Bureau, they always say, well, if I let them talk, I can never shut them up. If I get them talking, they'll never stop talking. And we say, if you don't let them start talking, they will continue to talk. So if you paraphrase, if you summarize, so, you know, Vicki, this is what this is about, you know, in your parish. You know, you've had a lot of trouble with people who don't want to change, and you've had some trouble with, you know, the associate pastor. And, you know, if you aren't able to sort of pick up those points, in this position, you know, the person I'm talking to, then you've really done a disservice to it. And that's closure. You know, that's what brings people. You wouldn't believe how fast people will stand up and walk out of your office. I mean, how long do some people stay in your office just sort of going over that same thing? Hours, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's an hour or more that you spend. If you don't remember, and what I do is that I summarize it. They go back, blah, 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 blah. Then I say something like, you know, as I said before, it sounds like it's about this and this and this and this. And they're like, yeah. And then, and I go, yeah. So is there other points to those? You know, it's sort of like people pretty quickly say, he's got it. He understands my perspective. You know, I've been validated and understood and heard. Okay. All of those are very, very good components. The last one is I feel statements. And I feel statements are on there not because they're particularly useful when you're acting as a mediator, but sometimes when you're starting to get out of control, you know, you're starting to lose it or come out of your homeostasis. You know, we talked about homeostasis and we'll talk about it more next week. But that idea that if you're just right on the edge, if you can grab a I feel statement, that's a good thing because it sort of says, this is about what's happening to me and I feel really frustrated, you know, when I push you to bed 3 times and you keep getting up, you know, to your daughter or when you can say to your boss, you know, I feel like I'm being dumped on unfairly because, you know, my caseload is now, I've got 17 different clients and my coworker only has 3, what's going on? So it's identifying rather than you are a bad person, you know, you're rotten because you keep dumping on me. You know, there's a completely different perspective. Now, I feel statements, I used to hate them. I never quite could figure out how to use them. And I finally have been able to utilize them right when I'm right on the edge. I start to get that quaking feeling. Make sense? There are questions about these?
Well, I was a little confused. It seemed like you were jumping to the other side with those iMessages instead of a mediation.
Mm-hmm. And I did jump, and that's the only one I jumped on was the I feel statements.
Okay.
Because I feel statements don't work very well as a mediator. They work pretty well in this role. Now, once again, I've said in this role, all depending on, I mean, your ability to actively listen, to ask good questions, will only be regulated by how far you're out of your homeostasis, how much empowerment and recognition you have done. And really, what we call this is bolstering. This is going to another person and making sure your point of view is valid and heard. Now, one of the things that this having to do with this solutions and solve it for me is that we only want them to solve it for us if they
agree with us.
If they agree with us, exactly. We don't ever want them to say, this really isn't a big deal, you know. In fact, I did this to a coworker a while ago. She was, we had done a training where we had developed all of these lists on paper. And we went back to this training a month later. And we had rolled these papers up and we were supposed to be taking them along with us. And she had told the administrative assistant to not forget to load them like about a week before we left. Well, we got to the training, we got in place, and then we remembered that we had forgotten it and the secretary had forgotten it. Okay. But we already had traveled 5 hours in the car. We never remembered it. We were standing up in front of the people, and we hadn't remembered it. And then all of a sudden, we remembered it. And we went to lunch, and she was just, I can't believe the administrative assistant. It wasn't her job. You know, it's in her job description, and that's her job, and she should be remembering it. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't have sympathy for her. I couldn't take her perspective because I thought, that's as much my responsibility as it was the administrative assistant. We didn't remember it until we were right up there in front of the people. You know, this isn't a big deal. I mean, we did the training just fine, and I told her that. And you know what happened then? Then I had a conflict with her. Okay? Because I failed in my role to bolster her position, to give her strength, to kind of acknowledge it. But sometimes we get caught, don't we, in that sort of that, it's not completely true. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, another thing that can happen with that, if a friend or a coworker comes to you, you know, is dumping on you and you give solutions, and then that person takes those solutions and they bomb on her, then it's your fault.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's got to be. Yeah. You can't give solutions to people. You've got to.
That's right, yeah.
Keep talking until they work out their own solution, and then they only have themselves. That can really backfire.
It can backfire very quickly on us. And yeah, and we learn to do it, and we learn to sort of only go so far because we really don't want to give the solution. The unfortunate part is that sometimes we steer him to what we think is the best solution. Well, don't you think it would be maybe a good idea, or have you thought of this? You know, when you hear yourself saying that, then you know that you're steering the bus. Probably the most important thing on this whole page is right at the top where it says follow them around. We follow the parties. We follow the conversation. And when somebody gets in front of us, or when we get in front of the parties, we better watch out because we're going to get run over. I mean, that's a pretty normal thing that happens. So I'm going to kind of jump over here to this side. You know, the I statements can work somewhat in this. This initial, you wanting to hurt them, is a, that's a pretty normal thing. And why do we want to hurt them?
Because they hurt us.
That's right. But remember, is there anybody powerful in conflict?
No.
No. There's no one feels powerful in conflict. So the fact that we're hurt probably means that they also feel hurt, that there's also some kind of powerlessness that's going on.
I feel often that I'm very powerful people, and that's the whole intimidation of the thing. And you're saying that we're both powerless?
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be here this week? Okay. Stick with me, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Stick with me on this. We'll go there. I promise you we'll go there.
It's worth it.
It's worth it. Wasn't he a jerk? You know, strategies. You're not listening to me. It's all of these words are all about our feeling powerless, isn't it? You heard me. Wasn't he a jerk? Or you're not listening to me. It's unfair. You hurt me, so I want you to apologize to me. You want to swear at them. In other words, you want to hurt them again. Most of these ideas are all about the fact that somehow I'm injured and I can't recover yet. Okay? And there's no easy way here. I mean, there's not, other than being able to say I statements, other than sort of giving yourself some time so you come back in your homeostasis, so you sort of recognize what your own control levels are and how you, clarity about what was going on, giving yourself a little bit of breath. The unfortunate piece is that we don't do that very well. Because the moment we start to get some sort of equilibrium back, the last thing we want to do is go back there and readdress it. And so we sort of smooth it over with a little bit of frosting, right? You know, and that other party also does the same thing because they don't want to dig that up. And it just sort of, everything sort of drops. And there's just a little more stress, a little more conflict in your organization. Here's what I'd like you to do. Oh, we're at just about an hour. I think you can do this. Here's what I'd like you to do. I want you to find a partner, one other person. And here's what I want you to do. I want somebody to decide that they're going to come and I want you to pick a real situation, something that you haven't solved. Conflict with a person, a decision whether or not you're going to build a house, any kind of just a small conflict. And I want the other person to listen. And I only want you to utilize these skills. I want you to also recognize that nowhere on this page does it say, my opinion counts. My ideas work. I want you to just sort of identify an issue, and I want one person to serve as kind of a mediator. And I only want you to utilize these skills. We have about 5 minutes to do this. So can you find...
I'm not running away.
That's fine. That's fine. So can you pair up with a partner right now? Pair up with a person. What would you, what did you miss most about this? What was different about this whole role? Was there anything different about it?
Yeah.
Didn't give a solution.
You have to pull yourself out of the situation, right. And you're listening and at the same time categorizing their story in order to understand and summarize where the crux of the story is in order to reflect back to them.
Absolutely. That couldn't have said it better myself. You know, he pulls out the components.
Right.
He gives, it's not about finding the solution, which is what I heard from this point. That is such a different role that we play. And we so automatically want to go, well, my brother had that same thing going. Or, I heard about this happening one time over here. You know, we immediately want to move to it. And if we are people who want to help people solve conflict, we actively listen, we paraphrase, we categorize, we try to kind of bundle it, and we try to help them understand it. Because remember that when you are in a conflict, you don't have as much clarity. You're out of your homeostasis. You're struggling for empowerment. And that's how we build empowerment. And that's how we build empowerment in our mediations. We don't ever say, you know, well, let's brainstorm now how to come up with a solution. It's like, no. I mean, if they aren't ready to do it, the reason they're not ready to do it is because they don't have any clarity. And as long as they don't have any clarity, I can brainstorm as a mediator for days, weeks, months. And if those solutions don't work, like you said, who are they going to come back to? Me. Did you have something to say?
Well, it sounds like the assumption is that the reason they have conflict is because they don't understand the conflict. But I'm not sure how that moves into solving the conflict. Because I found it's easy for me to ask questions, get more information, and even easy to paraphrase and summarize. Good. However, he wants to fix it. I don't know how to help him.
Okay, that's a great point. How did it feel to be the person that was talking?
Felt good.
Felt good. Why did it feel good?
You're venting. You're getting it off your chest.
Good.
Well, in response here, his questions made me truly feel he was trying to understand me. This wasn't a case of, you know, I couldn't feel a leading question there at all.
Right.
It was like, he wanted to really know what I was really saying at this point.
Okay. That is the point that I'm making, is that we all are capable of solving our own problems. All we need is some clarity. I mean, it's not that we're stupid because we're in conflict. We're in conflict, but we feel stupid. You know, we're all intelligent. We survive 95% of our day. We get through our life and we solve our own problems. It's when we get in conflict, we feel like, oh my gosh, that makes sense.
It does, but for instance, this is a 10-year problem.
Conflict is a long-term affair. And you know what? Mediators don't just, people come in, that two guys, they had been fighting for 5 years. And after 7 hours of mediation, 6 hours of mediation, one guy decided to quit. And I went, absolutely, good solution. You know, it wasn't the kumbaya moment that I wanted. I wanted them to hug and kiss, you know. No. 5 years they'd been in a conflict. I had a bunch of ideas about how to solve that. Put them in separate rooms. The first thing I thought. You know, but we have to think about this is that, you know, we help people gain clarity. And that's really all we can do as mediators. When they have enough empowerment and recognition, boom, they'll settle their own problems. And that is an idea of challenging the questions. Go ahead.
She asked the question, how long?
Yeah.
I was describing a problem that happened last week.
Yeah.
But when she said, how long? I went, 10 years. And that was an aha to me. Yeah, that really is just one of a subset of a 10-year-old conflict.
Yes.
Yeah. So that helps.
Yeah. You can stop the tape and we'll just keep talking.
I think one of the things too that keep us in that conflict is that we can gain the clarity and perhaps not like the answer. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we know what the solution is, but we don't want to do, like for example, that person quitting. He probably knew that was the best thing for could be doing for years. He didn't want that answer. He was looking for something else.
Right. And in the end, I wasn't going to give him the answer.
Right.
That because other people have given him the answer and those answers didn't work, because ultimately we really can't solve it for ourselves. We have to solve it for ourselves. We can't have other people help.
What was really interesting to me is that clarity came up. I used to do this for a living as a union negotiator.
Yeah.
Between her and I mediate her conflict, which pisses her off. And it just came up because you can't mediate somebody else's conflict because you're in it.
Right.
If the conflict is between us.
Yeah, and you can't do that. And it was very interesting. I never had saw that because that's, you know, what I used to do for a living.
Right. If you're in it, you're on this side of it.
And then you have,
you know, there's not enough empowerment, there's not enough recognition, there's just...
Right. And so it looks like manipulation to the other party.
Right.
Like you're manipulating them because you're not really emotionally involved, because you're dispassionate about whatever that they're trying to be passionate about.
Right, and you can reflect that passion more clearly than if you have some sort of stake, because if you have some sort of stake, they're attributing your reasons for doing this as internal, you're a bad person, or and they're attributing their own reasons to an external, it's because of something's happening to me externally. So it's about attribution theory, but yes, that is absolutely true.
I think the hardest thing for me as a pastor in a second call is that people expect me to fix things. And I have enough clarity, maybe being older and maybe being on the clergy end of things all my life, that I can't do that. So that's a real challenge for me as a pastor, that I tell people that I cannot fix it. I can listen to you, but I cannot fix your stuff.
Absolutely, you can't.
But boy, do they get mad.
They get mad, but ultimately, if you develop empowerment and recognition, they don't get mad because they come to their own responses. So I'm finished with the story of Jillian and I. Jillian came to me one day and said, I don't know if I told the story before, but Jillian said to me, I was supposed to go to Becca's house, but I didn't want to go. So I went to Jean's house, and I told Mom not to tell Becca. But Becca found out, and now Becca's mad at me. And, you know, I wanted, in my best way, to say to Jillian, I can't believe you did this. You should have been honest, because honest is important to me, and I wanted to plan my homeostasis in her. But I didn't. I said, tell me more. And so Jillian went on to tell me all about this whole situation, and you know, so I helped, and I paraphrased, and I clarified it. And in the end, she said to me, you know, I really need to be kind of honest when I do things. I need to be more honest with my friends, and if I didn't want to go there, I should have told Becca I didn't want to go there. And it's like,
yeah. But what if you disagree with their conclusion? My primary
no.
role is as a parent, and sometimes I just disagree with what ends up happening.
Well, if I really, this wasn't a situation where I was involved. I was acting as a mediator, not as a person who had a conflict between Jillian and I. Jillian and I didn't have any conflict. This conflict was for Jillian, it was between Jillian and Becca.
But if she had come back and said, I just need to be a better deceiver.
Yeah.
I mean, right.
Well, but see, that ultimately says, and this whole theory works on the basis that people are basically good, can solve their own problems, and live in community. And I believe that overwhelmingly most people will choose the right road. And the people who choose the wrong road, they're the sociopaths. They're the people who are outside of the norms. I mean, think about it.
You're telling me my kid's a sociopath.
No, I don't think so. We gotta go. I think that was the bell for church.